there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. I said that really fast for Friday, May 9th, 2014. I'm in a good mood. How are you? Are you in a good mood? I am in a good mood. I think I'm in a good mood. I could totally be faking this. Could you tell?
I've been married for 25 years. I can't tell.
Well, but not to me.
Well, you're
working on it.
I ain't gonna go there because I don't have two people mad at me. Yes, Phil. I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
It's Friday afternoon. We're talking Android. I am Phil Nickinson, the host of this little podcast. I don't know why. I don't feel like a host. Why do I say that? I run AndroidCentral.com. I host. I don't host it. The servers, I don't know. Anyway, it's Friday. We're talking Android. We got Jerry Hildenbrand of West Virginia.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Andrew Martin in Seattle.
Hey.
And Alex Doby in England.
Hey, everyone.
It looks like I have a giant zit on my nose, but I promise you I don't. That's like scar tissue from a bar fight when I was 12 years old, and the light's really picking it up nicely today. That's cool. It's the, I miss the magic of radio. Times were simpler then. What have you guys been up to? Alex has been on the road this week.
Just a little bit. Was in Paris for a couple of days with Richard Devine taking a look at this thing, PSN P7.
Oh.
So we'll talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, hang on to that. Hey, you know what I got today? I got a brand new tablet.
Woo!
Wow, a new old tablet.
What was this on sale? It's a Nexus 10, guys. It's the old Nexus 10. It's not some new Nexus tablet. What was it on sale for this week? Like it was $170 or something. It's refurbished, but still.
Yeah.
It's like, well, can't not pick one up for that price, right?
Yep, just so you have one.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry's had ours for a long time, so. But yeah, I mean, it's big. I think I'm happier with, hang on, let me pop my Nexus 7 out. Nexus 7, Nexus 10. Definitely happier with the smaller size, but I know we've been talking a little bit about, let's just jump into it, right? So we got more indications of a new Nexus device, and we already, I mean, there have been rumors about a new Nexus tablet for a while, and possibly from HTC, and possibly an 8-inch tablet. I mean, we've been talking about 8-inch tablets since that one weird render, like a marketing picture last year that I think was just whatever. But I'm starting to kind of get myself geared up for something a little bigger than 7 inches. That sounds horrible when I say it out loud. I'm starting to prepare myself for a tablet that might be larger than the one I currently own.
Well, we kind of talked about that a little bit when the G-Pad 8.3 came out, and we talked about, oh, this is kind of a nice form factor. It gives you a little more room. It doesn't feel as much like a big phone, but it's not that giant monstrosity that's the Nexus 10, and even more so when the Google Play edition of that came out.
Yeah, and I think with tablets like the iPad Mini and more recently Samsung with the Tab Pro 8.4 and even the Note Pro, the Note 8.0, I think it was last year or the year before, whenever that device came out, that size has always been closer to the sweet spot for tablets, I think. The 7-inch is starting to feel maybe just a little bit small now compared to the larger tablets. We've had, 12 or 13-inch tablets from Samsung, so maybe it's time to step it up a little bit in terms of screen size.
You think maybe it's just that the phones are getting so much bigger?
I guess that's probably part of it as well. When you have a 5.5-inch phone like the OnePlus One or a 5.2 like the Xperia Z2, not too much of a jump up to a 7-inch tablet. So yeah, people are wanting more screen size, and I think the 8-inch size makes more sense than maybe jumping all the way up to a 10 or even a 12.
And we have to remember for the people making the tablets, making an 8.9 or an 8-inch tablet is a whole hell of a lot easier than making a 7-inch tablet.
Yeah.
I'm still not convinced that it's kind of the best size for everybody. I still prefer the 7-inch size, mostly as a if you're sitting on the couch watching TV, it's you don't have to have both hands on it, holding it up. The 7-inch tablet can still be held in one hand, and you can kind of scroll through Twitter or Instagram or whatever. It doesn't have to be such an involved experience. So it's the size relation closer to a phone is actually a positive for me, and I've just never been into the larger tablets, so I'm kind of afraid that they're going to go to 8 inches or larger and, you know, leave out a 7 inch as well, mainly because it just wouldn't really make sense to have a 7 and an 8 and a 10 or something like that.
It's kind of my size.
Yeah.
So let's.
I wouldn't discount Google getting rid of the Nexus 7 when this new tablet comes out.
Right.
I think it's still a really solid device. It's not like the original Nexus 7. There were some performance issues. It was a little bit wonky. The Asus Nexus 7 is still a really solid tablet that I think they could continue to sell at maybe a price point below whatever the new Nexus tablet is.
Right, and we're not even a year out from the 2013 Nexus 7 right now. There's no indication that it couldn't go another year on the shelves from now.
So let's back up a little bit and recap what we learned today. And this actually kind of started yesterday. Honestly, I don't know who broke the story because a lot of people started talking about it once, so I apologize. But Flounder was seen as, you know, it showed up in the Chromium, in one of the Chromium logs somewhere. And, you know, Flounder is as a Nexus name. So cool. I mean, there, not much to say beyond that at the time because Google has always named its Nexus devices, you know, internal code names that they use in code and stuff, right? After fish, you know. How do you pronounce it? Maguro. Yeah. And just a whole line of them. So now we have Flounder. It's like, okay, cool. No, I mean, we know something's coming. Now we have a code name. Great. Not much beyond that. But then this morning it came out, somebody in the XDA comments spotted this changelog, and it's just... And there are changelogs, and there are changelogs, right? You know,
this is a 4,000-line changelog.
This is like check-in code changelog, serious stuff that I don't understand probably 99% of it. And then as everybody's looking at it, Alex and I think all the other Android sites kind of saw it at the same time. They're all just like, holy crap, there's this new name, Molly, and then Flounder. So, I mean, yeah, we have a name for some sort of Nexus device from, who is it from?
Well, it's basically Google, it would seem. So the way it works is, device/Google/Molly, whereas before it would be, for the new tablet, for example, it's device/HTC/Flounder. So it would seem that this is basically Google handling the hardware as well as the software, so probably in the same vein that they did with the Nexus Q.
Gotcha. All right, so let's convert over to Molly, because, I mean, Molly, it flat out says set top in there, right, in the code.
Yeah, pretty much. That's a Bluetooth... based code change. I'm not sure the exact contents of that, but it's, in big block capital letters, set top box, and there are other indications there as well. You've got DRM stuff built in there being checked in. Let's see what else. Certain networking based things, like things with Bluetooth that would translate very well into support for a Bluetooth remote control, for instance. Suggestions. I think. Some indication that maybe it's an NVIDIA chip powering this thing, which, we've seen that before with the UYAR device.
So here's my question. Will it look like that? Because I would love for it to be like that.
No, I wish it would actually fit into normal people's entertainment centers.
Like that?
Like that.
Like that! I miss my Nexus Q. That thing was awesome. I would kill for just another sphere with, like, lasers shooting out of pew, pew, pew.
Oh,
you're the only person that would buy it.
I'm going to tear the Nexus Q apart and put a Raspberry Pi inside it.
Yes!
No, that's a good idea.
Well, even the chipset, just like an actual Pi.
Jerry will be spooning pie out of a Nexus Q. It's like that scene in Indiana Jones when they're eating the monkey brain. Never mind. that's basically all we know at this point, right? Like, just...
Pretty much the bits and pieces we can piece together from what's in this changelog, but really not a whole lot of solid information on hardware from either of these. Small indications in places that maybe both are running NVIDIA chips, but beyond that, we really don't know a whole lot.
I don't know anything.
All right, then. Google I.O. is a month and a half out. I don't imagine they'll announce anything before that, right? Probably not.
I think we might get 443 before then, but any new hardware at this stage is going to be I.O.
Yeah. Cool. Wow, that was a whole lot of excitement for like a whole lot of, all right, well, that's all we know. you know.
Well, how long's it been? And not counting the Nexus 7 refresh, it's been since last October since we saw a new Nexus device.
I would count the Nexus 7 refresh. That was a pretty big refresh, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was still a 7-inch tablet replacing a 7-inch tablet with better internals.
Oh, but it looks so much better.
This looks to be something new.
Right, right. No, I get what you're
saying. We all love new.
I'm just looking here. I wanted to see how 4.3 has been hitting analytics. So let's see. 4.4.3. And, yeah, it's still going. Not quite as hard as it was last week, but it's still there. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It'd be cool to see it, I guess.
I just want it to be right. I don't care if it takes another month to get here.
Exactly.
I want it to be right. I'm tired of fixing two bugs to introduce three others.
Well, in the meantime, we did get, I'm trying to find my link to that, we did get the update to Google Play Services this week.
Yep.
Did I not? I didn't even put that in the script, did I? Yeah, I did.
One sec before people start emailing.
Sure.
Yes, I love a Nexus device. I understand part of it is taking the code as it's written, and you're like the beta tester, and I get that, and I'm okay with that. But I just want my Nexus 5 to work really well. So I would love to see it come out bug-free this time.
You know, especially for the people working on it, too.
Yep.
Not just for us, but I mean, yeah, for us.
Mainly just for me.
Just for Jerry. Do it for Jerry, guys. Come on. Jerry, you want to walk us through this new Google Play Services?
It's mostly just API changes. Mm-hmm. It's that's kind of difficult because for you and I, it doesn't mean a whole lot. But what it does is it opens up new things for developers. The two major ones, at least to me, where there's now a new category for on foot.
Right.
Before, location services could tell if you were on a bike, if you were in a car or a bus, or if you were on foot. Now when you're on foot, they can tell if you're walking or if you're running. And that's going to mean a lot for fitness apps. You know, there's a lot of reasons why you would need to be differentiating between somebody walking, like me walking to the store, and I need directions, or somebody running, like doing something with Runtastic. So that's pretty cool. Developers will have a field day with that. And the rest was a combination of what they're doing with ads and direct purchasing. I can see, and I use Shop Android as an example. Imagine if you pick up your phone and you go to shopandroid.com, and we can have an application, a web app, and it runs and it sees what kind of phone you have. It shows the things that work for your phone. You push one button and you can buy it through Google Wallet. You don't have to enter anything. And it just shows up in your mailbox 2 days later and it gets deducted from your default card on Google Wallet.
Well, and then on the native side, because I was actually talking to some of our coders about this yesterday, you have these new APIs for mobile ads. Right.
Yes.
So we could tuck this in there. So theoretically, if I'm reading this right, if you were browsing something, say in a Galaxy S5 forum, you could see a little ad pop up that would, you know, specifically target you with Galaxy S5 stuff from Shop Android. Like that's a really good idea. I love the idea of that. I mean, as much as I loathe ads, being able to target ads like that just makes the experience so much better.
And I don't think it's quite there yet, but I envision this as you're browsing Galaxy S5 forum. You can get an ad at the bottom for the hot new case for your Galaxy S5. Press one button and order it.
Right. And that's stuff we've talked about for a long time.
Yep.
But, you know, it sounds like instead of us hacking it together, Google's done it for us.
What you said before, we all hate ads. As the consumer, we don't want to see ads. We don't want to see ads in our apps. We don't want to see them on the internet. But they are a necessary evil. What's wrong with having them better and good?
Right.
So that got me excited. It's kind of crazy to be excited about ads.
Show me something that, you know, I might actually want to buy. And not just, I think what really turns me off about ads and apps, and I've talked about this with our guys, because eventually we're going to have to make some sort of money off our app, right? Like, I love that we give it away for free, and I definitely still want to do that. But, you know, we're not making money on it, and we should. But I hate seeing just the crappy AdSense little banner.
Right.
You know, like, I want us to do something better than that. I want all ads to be better than that. I get that they have a purpose, but, you know, it can be done better. So,
and, you know, when you say ads, Google is the first word you should think of. Let's be honest.
Oh, sure.
So I'm looking forward to seeing the first developer that uses this in a very creative way that makes things better. Yeah. And it's going to happen.
Somebody will. And then you also have a Maps API in there that
indoor maps have been improved and much easier to embed 360 street views in your app, which would be interesting too.
I saw Android Police did their usual teardown and found, you know, hooks for Android Wear and stuff. Like, I mean, nothing that, you know, surprised me at all. It's like, okay, right. I mean, they're starting to put hooks in for things we know are coming. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah. If we expect to see Android Wear at the end of next month, they better start getting the software ready to make it work with your phone.
Yeah. I mean, nothing. I didn't see anything that really excited me other than, yeah, it's coming, but we knew that. So cool. I love how they're doing that in Play Services.
Well, it's good and bad. It's good for everybody that's got a, what was the phone that just got updated, but it's still 4.1, the 1S.
Yes.
If you're still using something like a 1S, because that's all you need, it's great that you can have all these new features. It's not so great that these new features aren't more open. I would like to see them more open. I won't say that they're abandoning the open source side, because they're not. They're still working on that as well. But I would like to see some of these new maps features be a little more open in location services and AOSP. But I'm not going to get everything I want. So,
sorry. Andrew and Alex just tuned out while we nerded out. Sounds like a good time to do some Q&A. How about that?
Jonathan.
Should we just start at the top?
Yes.
All right. Sam says, Google Drive is now requiring Docs and Sheets and eventually Slides to be installed in order to edit files. Lots of negative consumer feedback via the Play Store and the Internet. What do you guys think? Does this feel like a step backwards with Drive for any of you? I mean, they made it really simple to go download the new apps, right? I get that it's a pain in the ass.
It doesn't even send you to the Play Store to install it. It just pops up in the app and lets you install it.
That's kind of interesting because normally just for normal apps, there are steps to stop you, steps in place that stop app developers from just having apps that download other apps, right?
Yep. That's against the rules for the developer agreement.
Well, not if you make the agreement.
Yeah, you write the agreement.
I mean, it's weird. Is it really that weird, though? Well, I mean, I haven't even really paid that much attention. Like, I've heard people yelling about it and whatever.
So, but I mean, people are yelling because, oh my gosh, you're taking up so much room. There's going to be three, maybe four apps now to edit documents on my phone. Well, if you're somebody that doesn't care about editing documents, you don't have to install Docs, Sheets, or Slides.
Let's get down to one app looking at pictures before we start complaining about that.
Well,
right. So these are completely optional. If you don't want to edit, you can edit in a different app all you want. You can use Polaris Office or Quick Office or whatever. But what it does mean is if you're somebody that doesn't want to have that editing capability, Drive is now more of a Google Drive. It's not Drive plus Docs and presentations and slides and all of, or sheets and all this other stuff all in one. If you just want to use it as storage, it's just storage now. And if you happen to put docs in there, you can view them and that's it.
Do you think part of it is down to people maybe searching for Google Docs and being confused about the distinction between Docs and Drive? Because that was something came up back when the switchover was made from, you know, rolling all this stuff into Google Drive. And maybe, I don't know, but I get the impression maybe that's part of the decision here.
I think that confusion's been there since, you know, Docs just randomly got turned into Drive, and the ability to upload files to it and just have it be more as a file storage has always been kind of a little clunky because it still defaults to showing you your documents, and everybody had all these legacy documents stuck in there. So I think it's going in the right direction towards, if you want to edit documents, you'll download Google Docs. If you want to deal with files on Drive, you'll download Drive.
Can I step in here and say that I think it's freaking great? No longer do I have to have a 10 megabyte app that can edit all this stuff if I'd never want to touch spreadsheets. Google has always been modular, and I hope they continue this trend. Break out more things. You, in the end, you're not losing any space because now they can slim down Drive. They can probably share a lot of the code between the three editors as well. And if I don't want to look at, you know, presentations, Google Slides, I don't need to install it. I'm never going to do that on my phone. A lot of people aren't ever going to do that on their phone. Now we don't have to. We don't have to install it. Choice.
Yeah, right on. That's true. What else? Oh, we were reading Q&A, weren't we?
Yeah.
That's what we were doing. Ryan Saldana asks, how do you guys feel about Motorola's hardware strategy so far? We've seen the Moto X, the flagship device, and Moto G take the philosophy to the low end. The rumored Moto E appears to be right around the corner, going even lower. Can they compete? And we had, what was it, a Moto G Cinema version has been rumored? I haven't even read that story yet.
That was kind of weird, too.
Yeah. Let's see.
So kind of interesting. All the branding for and the marketing stuff for the E suggests it's going to be basically around a $100 level smartphone. We're taking it a step back from where the Moto G was, around $180, the $100 mark where they're talking about it replacing feature phones and flip phones. People still using those. And you know they did a really good job with the Moto G, bringing it having a smartphone at that price point that was actually decent. And I think it'll be interesting next Tuesday in London to see whether they can do that with the E at an even lower price point.
As far as competing, we have to remember for the Android side, this supposedly $100 smartphone is going to compete against $350 smartphones from Samsung. That's, the feature phone competition is one thing. Sure, it's going to attract a lot of feature phone people, but those people now have a choice that's not $350 from Samsung for a hopefully decent running phone. And that's the key.
I think the other interesting part is maybe how much of the functionality they can keep, because they paired a lot back with the G for obvious reasons, for hardware reasons. You can't keep all the fancy Moto X stuff. But maybe if they can make it a little bit more interesting, if they can go to the $100 price point and keep some of the Motorola identity in terms of the features, that might be differentiated for them.
I need to write something up, so I'm trying to go running again to varying degrees of success. And Tuesday, I took the Moto G with me because it's smaller, right? So I'm holding it and just forgetting how good that phone felt and how good it feels at that size compared. It makes everything else seem so big. I'm really wanting to see something a little more powerful. That's my only complaint.
Isn't it amazing though that the Moto G runs better than any of the $700 phones from 2012 did?
Absolutely.
That's insane.
And that's actually kind of a segue into what I saw in Paris this week.
Okay. What did you see in Paris this week?
I saw this, the Huawei Ascend P7. So this is their successor, the P6. They released that last year. Kind of a decent phone. We reviewed it. Andrew, I think you played with it, whether it was a US version or whatever. Kind of similar themes this year. They've really gone a lot into the design of this thing, and it looks externally kind of similar to the P6. But it just seems like they've got the precision of it down a lot better than they did before. You've got a glass back now. You've got kind of a Nexus 4 Optimus G style reflective back on it, which you can see in our pictures, kind of difficult to show on camera. I mean, the overall design is kind of iPhone-esque, but I like it. It feels really nice in the hand. It's light. You've got the metal trim around the outside, which has some heft to it, but it feels like a solid smartphone. Where this falls down for me is basically the software and the general speed of it and the smoothness and just the user experience, really. They have this new UI, which is the Emotion UI 2.3, kind of based off what they had before with this sort of highly skinnable look. No separate app drawer, so everything is basically on the launcher. And then you have the sort of customizable widget up at the top where you can store weather, favorite contacts, and stuff like that. The problem for me with this is that it just doesn't feel anywhere near as fast to use as any of the, you know, the phones that it's competing with at the sort of €450 price point. And I'm not really sure whether that's lack of software optimization. It's difficult to tell. They're using their own sort of homegrown CPU by their silicon company that they own. It's basically a 1.8 gigahertz Cortex A9. So, I mean, it's reasonably powerful, but not quite matching up to what you see from Qualcomm and others right now. And Jerry, I don't know whether something like, you know, the kernel version, they're using an older kernel version, 3.0.8, that whether that might affect things. But it's a nice piece of hardware that just seems to be let down a little bit by the software and just by the general speed of things.
It's probably a case of a lot of the core Android bits are just generic. You know, they don't have a big, huge team in-house like Motorola or HTC or Samsung does that are tweaking that for their particular hardware. It makes it kind of rough. A lot of those cheap Chinese tablets are the same way. The hardware is plenty, but the software just runs poorly because it's like what you or I can just download and build, and they just installed it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that makes a difference. I found the same on the P6. It was kind of the exact same narrative of the hardware being good and the specs seeming like they could be good enough to push it around. As you see, manufacturers doing so much more with even less hardware. And then the software speed just feels a little off, like it's a little too slow for 2013 when I reviewed the P6, and then now 2014, the P7.
And the odd thing for me is that it's not just general lag that like you would sometimes see on an old Android phone. Certain animations are absolutely fine and buttery smooth, like flipping from home screen to home screen, no problems there at all. You drag the notification shade down, and in most apps, you'll get kind of a stuttering effect when it drops down the screen. And there are instances of that sort of throughout where it'll be fine 1 minute, and then it'll just start. There'll be this weird instance of lag the next. It's a little bit strange.
That's kind of a shame when you see so much visual customization, and then nothing under the hood was changed potentially.
I guess, yeah. I mean, we don't know nothing was changed under the hood. I mean, one thing that really impresses me about this phone is, you know, especially from Huawei, which is a big manufacturer, but not one that has a huge track record in cameras or anything. 13 megapixel camera around the back, you know, very impressive, as certainly a lot of the flagships we were seeing last year. And the 8 megapixel front-facing camera, which is kind of interesting as well. So they've got this, they call it the groovy mode. You can have basically panoramic.
The what mode?
The groovy mode. So wow. It's like a group selfie. Yeah, it's there was some groaning.
So hang on. If Sprint were to get this phone, could I take a groovy of my family?
No, you wouldn't. I wouldn't allow you to do that.
Thank you.
So I mean, it's a stupid name. But the feature itself works pretty well. It's basically a panorama with a front-facing camera. So you hold it up, take a picture of yourself, take a picture of left and right. So you can have a picture of you and just a bigger background behind you, or you can bring more people in, or you can even have the same person on either side. That's kind of fun to do because there's actually a pause between taking various pictures, so you can rearrange people. That's kind of fun to do that. So it's a lot of that is has been pretty impressive. The camera app itself is nicely featured. You have a mode built in for the front-facing camera where you can have a preview that appears in the top left corner that you can focus on, which actually helps with centering your eyesight or your eye line, so it looks like you're looking at the camera and not a screen off to one side, which is kind of neat. A few different shooting modes, a nice looking HDR mode. Like Motorola, it has this mode where you can automatically switch into HDR if it detects that there's a lot of brightness going on or whatever. But just generally a really solid camera, which is nice to see from a phone like this.
Europe only? I mean, Europe, Asia, anywhere other than the U.S. for now?
They said global. I mean, with Huawei in the U.S. is kind of a contentious issue right now, so who knows whether we'll ever see it in the U.S. or whether any U.S. carriers will be compelled to pick it up. But launching in Europe from June, €450. Like I said, solid phone, solid camera, really nice build quality. I think the software performance is letting them down a little bit, though.
But flat, would you pay 450 euros for it? That's a lot of money. We're Americans. We don't understand how much 450 euros is.
And apparently we can't do math.
It's 450 euros in the context of other phones which cost maybe 500 or 600 or even 700. You know, phones just cost more in Europe.
Yeah, I just was... What else is in the 450 euro price range?
You would probably be looking at... let's see. I guess the Moto X would be a little bit below that. You'd maybe be looking at one of last year's flagships. So Galaxy S4 or M7 or something like that.
I wasn't sure what the Nexus cost or...
The Nexus was about 300, I think, in euros. So it's comfortably above that. I mean, the Nexus is kind of a bad example because it's sort of subsidized by Google, but it's around the price level of one of last year's flagships for a phone that they were comparing. You know, they had, especially camera comparisons, they were showing it next to shots from the Galaxy S5 and the iPhone 5S. And, you know, interesting to see for a phone like this that it actually, in a lot of instances, takes better looking night shots than the GS5 in some instances. Mm-hmm. Kind of crazy.
Well, that's not hard to do.
You alluded to it. They have a big uphill battle outside of Asia.
Yeah.
So
yeah, definitely.
But
you know, I don't think they're quite there yet. The software didn't hold them back this year.
They sell a whole hell of a lot of phones in Asia, though. So
sure. But I'm sure they'd love to sell a whole hell of a lot of phones in Europe and the Americas too.
Yeah.
And they're trying very hard to. I mean, you know, what do you think this launch in Paris is all about? Yep. Getting all the European media over there. They did the same in London last year, and they're continuing to push with this. You know. Taking the money that they make in other countries and plowing it into spreading their brand through Europe.
Yeah, I mean, that's really why I thought it was worth us going over there. I mean, they are not an unimportant company by far. So, cool. Hey, Andrew, where are you at on the OnePlus One? How's that coming along?
I've been in the forums answering dozens and dozens and dozens of questions and on Google Plus and on Twitter. Everybody seems to have... You know, they're kind of pillar five questions or so that they need answered. And so I'm wrapping up kind of a conglomeration, you know, top questions answered post right now that should probably, you know, it gives me three or four paragraphs on, you know, big issues to answer. But I'm just more getting into the groove of using the big phone because it's quite large, and so I'm physically adjusting my hand to that. We got a software update on Tuesday that ironed out a lot of things. Took care of a couple of wake during sleep issues that were hurting battery life and fixed a couple bugs. There's still some more bugs to be ironed out, so I'm still not putting my foot down on a lot of things because things can change and likely will change. But I'm actually coming away a lot more impressed with the phone after another week using it than I thought I was going to be. You know, dealing with the size is kind of been the biggest issue, actually. The software has been really good after a few of these bugs have gotten ironed out. Battery life has been better. Camera performance seems really good. It's kind of tough to have anything to complain about, especially when I think about the price of the phone.
So it's absolutely still a work in progress.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why it's, you know, I'm reluctant to, you know, put out a review. By the time I finish a review, things will have changed throughout. And we're expecting another software update early next week and more after that. Because, you know, this phone's not going on sale to the general public for, you know, weeks to come. So they're kind of still ironing out the last minute things.
I like how they're being so transparent about it pre-release. I mean, can't tell you how many times we've been, you know, reviewing a phone. Sometimes maybe it's under NDA or maybe it's just not released yet. And then you get a software update and every now and then it changes something pretty significant and you don't necessarily know that that's coming. And it's just like, ah, damn it.
Right. So like this last update, this last update, like I said, improved battery life, and it changed a few of the defaults on the phone. So some things that I thought that were kind of odd that were set to default are now turned off or changed to where they make more sense. And, you know, it's all those little things. Luckily, there are no glaring software issues. There's, you know, things have been getting tightened up, and I would expect those to, you know, be ironed out with another 3-4 OTAs that will never arrive to the people that get their phones, you know, from the regular release, because
those will all be baked in from the start.
Cool.
So with a lot of the Android flagships right now, it's kind of easy to think about them in terms of weaknesses than strengths, really. I mean, you have the GS5, which is kind of a good all-rounder, but with the M8, you have the camera, which is a little bit wonky. You have the sort of slipperiness of the chassis. With the Z2, it's very big and boxy. I'm wondering what you think is this phone's Achilles heel right now. Bear in mind, of course, it's still pre-release software.
I mean, the two big things I could say right now, one is just the size. It's just too big. They made a big deal about it being a 5.5-inch phone and a 5-inch form factor. It just completely dwarfs the Nexus 5 in terms of footprint. It even dwarfs the Galaxy S5, which, you know, has slightly bigger bezel around it and is a 5.1-inch screen. It's just too big for, you know, people to use in one hand. And, you know, I've got large hands and, you know, it has me, like, you know, longing for the size of the Nexus 5, where I can actually reach all the way across the screen. So that's kind of the Achilles heel for me right now. The screen looks great for its size and everything. It's bright and crisp and has all the right colors and everything. I would say that it's just the size. And then right now, like I said, not being able to put my foot down on the software, I assume that things, you know, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that those things are gonna all be ironed out and perfect by the time it comes out. But, you know, I don't know right now, and some people are going to be pushing the buy button before they do know. And those are kind of the two things that are worrying me right now.
I want to go back to what Alex just said about looking at these phones kind of from the negatives and things that aren't quite right. Because I'm still struggling with, I mean, we still need to do our here's the best smartphone thing because we need to. But I'm still having a hard time absolutely justifying it and saying here's the best Android smartphone, because they are all really good and they all just each have, you know, one or two little things that can separate them from each other, but not necessarily this one, you know, gigantic pedestal that says this is the best phone, right? So maybe I'm coming at it from a different direction now, and it's more here's the phone that adds more to the experience than the others. Maybe
I think the way I was thinking of it, because, you know, this is a question we've all been thinking about because we got this article to write, we've got to do it at some point. I've kind of been coming at it as from the perspective of, okay, which of these phones' weaknesses is going to least bother the average consumer? Which one adds? Which one doesn't compromise the experience so much? Which one is the best sort of all-rounder? Because that's what we want to pick. And it's been, I've been using this Z2 for about a week and a half now, and it's a big phone. It's probably no larger. I think it's actually a little bit smaller than the Z1, Sony's last flagship. But it's really hard to come up with anything with this phone which is bad in any way, besides just the general sort of largeness of it. It's fast. It's the camera is as good as any Android camera, maybe with the exception of the Galaxy S5 in daylight. But it's closer to that sort of crucial middle ground where it's good in daylight and good in low light. Great-looking screen, fantastic battery life, I guess the only problem with the US is that Sony hasn't released the unlocked version there. There's been these rumors of the Verizon version, and that's not been confirmed yet either. So, it's difficult to make that choice.
Like any of these phones we've seen in the past, I don't know, probably 6 months, I don't think I would, you know, maybe go back farther. I don't think I would, you know, look at any of them and just kind of shake my head and be like, ooh, I'm sorry.
And it makes it really tough because it makes you sound like you're nitpicking at things.
Right.
But, you know, when it comes down to it, like I said, when I'm talking about the OnePlus One and people ask me questions, they think that I'm being overly critical or I'm nitpicking at things. It's because the phone is really, really nice. And, you know, if you're asking me to say what bothers me, I'm going to have to kind of go beyond, you know, oh, the camera just, if the camera is terrible, like that's an easy scapegoat. You say the camera is terrible. But if you say, oh, well, the camera just has maybe a little too much grain when you're looking at low light pictures without HDR, it's, you know, that's kind of, if it comes down to that, then, you know, you're doing something, the manufacturer's doing something right because they've they've eliminated as much of the issues as possible.
It's a good problem for us to have editorially, put it that way.
I guess, yeah. For me, it comes down to the two main areas that I think phones still have a lot of potential to improve in. You know, we've seen performance improve so much and screen quality improve so much. And, you know, I think with screens in particular, we'll start to see 2K displays in the next few months, and we'll see how, you know, whether we get diminishing returns there. But the two areas that we still have lots of room to improve, camera and battery life. And I think that's going to be maybe the deciding factor for me, because we've seen you know, the Galaxy S5, which has decent battery life, but not spectacular battery life. It has a great camera, but, you know, with the M8, it's the other way around. You have pretty good battery life, but the camera is a little bit less impressive than you would hope. So for me, it's finding a phone that really nails those two categories. And that's probably why I'm leaning towards the Z2 at the moment. We'll see what LG can do later in the month.
All right, Alex brought up 2K displays, and we'll get to that in a second, but I want to do some more Q&A first. So Richard asks, last week you sounded really down on removable batteries. Can you explain to a layman why they're so bad? What is so bad about them?
I don't recall us being down on...
Well, I was.
I mean, maybe in general, but...
Phil and I were.
Oh, okay.
The best way I can think of to describe it is... A non-removable battery lets a smaller phone like the G2 get the same battery life as the Note 3 because the battery is thinner, it fits into more crannies, it's molded to fit the device, and it's huge, just like the Note 3's battery is. Don't fool yourself into thinking that the G2 or the Note 3 gets any better battery life than any other phone. They just have a whole lot more battery in there.
Remember, that's when we start talking about the difference between battery life and battery capacity.
Right.
Right. Or battery life still isn't even the right word, right? Think of it as, output, maybe. But, yeah, it lets them physically do different things and better things with the phone, I think. I don't – if anyone thought I was down on removable batteries, I wouldn't take it that way, and I should really start saying removable with all the actual letters in it so I don't sound like I live where I live. I can't even say it. Like, I can't even think about that and say it right. Can't make myself say it. Removable? I don't know. Anyway.
Removable.
Yeah.
Them ones what you can take out.
Say aluminum, Alex.
Say what? I don't recognize that word.
Never mind. if I had to, you know, out of those two things, removable batteries, I got it. Or SD cards, if I had to be down on one, it would be more so on the SD cards for physical and software reasons. Jerry was just in a bad mood last week.
I was sick. And there was nothing. Quite frankly, last week I didn't see anything that impressed me. I'm allowed to have those kind of weeks once in a while. I am allowed to be choosy. Don't make me lower my standards.
Brian asks, what are you expecting or wanting to see at Google I.O.? What would be the big wow of the conference? I think we talked about this a little bit. For me, I want to see cars. I think cars are more important than watches at this point. And some of that, I think, is just personal preference. I would rather have a really good car experience over, you know, worrying about the watch. But I mean, that said, I'm still really interested in the watch.
So. You just want them to give you a car.
Well, no. No. That's mine. I don't know. What about you guys?
I want to see consumer Google Glass.
Yeah.
I don't want to see it necessarily for sale, but I want to learn more about it. I want to learn a price, what they're working on for design, and when they plan to have these things ready. I want to be able to buy one for my kids at Christmas if they want one.
Fair enough. Andrew?
I think glass is an interesting thought, more so, and I want to see what a real Rev 2 of the hardware for glass would look like. Presumably that's going to be tied to a consumer launch, because we've been holding on to this initial semi-consumer launch design, and, you know, there's clear design changes that could be made that would make it a little more socially acceptable. Maybe, you know, making it more even on both sides of your head, reducing the size of, you know, the big thing jutting out from your eyebrow, and then now the integration with the frames and things like that would be really interesting from glasses perspective anyways.
I think the new tablet's going to be interesting, just because it's the biggest change to the sort of flagship Google tablet for a couple of years. I think that's going to be a welcome change. I think Android Wear is going to be interesting to actually get that up and running and see it working in a real environment, and hopefully, you know, get hands on that as well and see how it works in the real world as opposed to in, you know, precisely edited demo videos.
Fair enough. Wendell asks, with the new Google Play Services teardown that Android Police did, there are a bunch of references to Google Voice. What would you like to see with Google Voice? Any idea when we might see something? Yeah, I mean, that was one of those things that, again, long time ago, Google said, yes, we're going to do something with Google Voice and Hangouts, so, you know, stay tuned. And it was going to be this time of year. So, yeah, any time now, and that was one I just wasn't at all surprised to see in there. I'd expect it to tie in there somehow, right? I mean,
I just hope that this extra, you know, kind of downtime of us not hearing anything is because they're really working on getting it right this time. It's really a hacked together system right now from a user experience standpoint, and I just want them to get it right. I mean, the unauthorized API access is shut down in 6 days or whatever it is, and then they can really go from there now, knowing that they don't have to deal with any of that stuff anymore. I just hope that they, you know, make it right, because they can't mess around with people's phone numbers. Hopefully they understand that.
And that's probably part of the reason why it's taking so long. When you have to deal with carriers, when you have to deal with a bunch of people whose numbers you already have signed up to Google Voice, any kind of major change is going to have to happen very, very slowly and very carefully.
Yep.
I want them to pull back on their weird thing they've had going on with Sprint. I want that to be available to everybody, better integration. And I want to see a really freaking good iOS app. Those are the two things you need to get people to jump on board the Google Voice bandwagon. When you've got 5 million users out of a billion smartphone users, that's one thing. But when you've got 500 million users, it's a whole nother way to look at it. And
we take it for granted the way that Google Voice integrates with the native dialer on Android. So that's a good point about the iOS app. You know, they're not going to be able to integrate with the dialer properly. You gotta do a really good first party experience.
And it's not horrendous on iOS. I used it for a little while.
But it's not just pick up the phone and dial.
Right. It's not quite as easy. Sergey asks, what will happen to Android if Oracle wins? If you haven't seen it today, appellate judge came back and said, oh, wait a minute, this whole Java/Oracle/Google/Android lawsuit that we thought was done a long time ago, not so much done. And
it's done.
You think it's done?
Yeah, it's done.
Fair enough. We're done.
What would happen to Android if Oracle wins? Nothing. The same thing that'll happen to Oracle, because their APIs were all yanked from IBM.
Let me see if I can explain this in English, because I was reading about it over lunch. So Android is written in Java, right?
Right.
And back in the day, Google was talking to Java and talking to who owned it before? Sun Microsystems, right? Said, all right, we're going to write this in Java because we want, you know, Java developers to be able to develop for Android very easily. Cool. And was it Sun or was it Oracle? I forget. They said, well, you can't just flat out, you know, use our stuff. You can't use our APIs, but you can. They basically redeveloped the API so that they still use Java and still were put together the same way, because they need to be able to be that way to still, you know, work together and be able to port, even though they're not, you know, I mean, it's not like they copied and pasted it, right? But then Oracle says, no, that's still bad. Right?
Pretty much. Okay. That's a good way for a normal person to think of it.
Me,
right?
This guy.
Right.
All right.
The important thing here is, what happens if APIs become copyrightable? Do you know Motorola uses APIs through iCloud when you buy a new phone if you want to sync your iCloud stuff? If APIs are copyrightable, Apple can wipe Motorola off the face of the earth. Is that what we really want to see? The rest of the world is smart and knows that this can't happen. What's wrong in the United States? Must be something in the water. I don't know. It does not surprise me that Oracle got a handful of judges to agree with them and get it sent back to court. But in the end, even if it takes somebody like Microsoft or Apple or Yahoo or groups like that to stand up in court and say, hey, look, you cannot make APIs copyrightable and patentable, or you've ruined software development, period, forever. I think if that's what it takes, that's what's going to happen, because it's, we just can't let that happen in this country. Don't let it happen, kids. Fight the man.
Fight the power. Sing it. You know you want to do it. Sing it.
I won't.
Just floating through here. Let's talk about the LG Ultra High Definition QHD whatever display.
Right. Did you notice they say these aren't in production yet? That the press release was that they got approved by this testing labs, and now they can go into production. We sure these are going to be G3 screens if they're not in production, or do we think they might already be in production and something got lost in translation?
I think there's production and there's mass production, right?
Yeah.
Imagine if they're announced end of the month, maybe mass production comes in a couple weeks, ready for a launch at the end of June or whatever.
Right, and then there's production for themselves, and there's production for sale for other people.
Yeah.
Knowing LG the way I know LG, they would not have put that out if they weren't about to use it in something. Put it that way.
We can all agree on what that something is going to be.
Sure.
I don't want everybody to freak if it's a different QHD display in the G3, which I'm sure LG has other display technology that they've always been working on. I just don't want everybody to freak out if this is for something else.
Well, they have that phone that just launched in Japan, which I can't remember the name of, but it looks more or less like the leaks of the G3 that we've seen. From all indications, this is just the G3 for Japan. So obviously they have phones that they're preparing for,
right,
for the market that are using this QHD technology. So it's probably going to follow pretty closely on from that. I think this is going to be the screen that we get in the G3.
Ryan Boyle asks, any thoughts on the potential massive changes to the stock UI that started floating around recently? Android Police has had rumors about some of the icons and stuff changing. And guess what, kids? Icons change. User interfaces change.
Icons have changed just with app updates in the Play Store.
Yeah. I
had somebody from Google tell me that if you don't think the next version of Android is going to have a little bit different visual look and feel than the last version, you haven't been paying attention since 2008.
Quit exactly. Your job. Yeah. I mean, we could make a huge deal out of it, but it's like something changes almost every time. So let's.
And we're not expecting a major new version of Android until end of the year. Anything that's in development now can and will change up until then.
Yep.
So, I mean, am I excited for it? Sure. Will it be cool when it happens? Absolutely. But
will it look at all like what we're seeing now in 6 months from now? Probably not.
Yeah. I worry when people who don't create things talk about huge, sweeping, massive changes.
And it's just really easy for people to get duped by a lot of fan icon renders, because it's really easy to just make things that you like.
Galaxy S5 Prime is a perfect example.
Yep. Yikes.
Yeah, that was pretty funny this week.
Yeah, it was. Guys, that metal Galaxy S5 picture, it's a Photoshop. It's fake because we made it.
I feel really bad. When Derek made it, he probably should have put "not real" and a big watermark across it or something.
I'm pretty sure it was in the file name, and I'm pretty sure it was in the alt tag.
And I'm pretty sure each and every one of us called it that this would happen when we originally put that picture out. So it's pretty funny to see that don't happen now.
We weren't trying to fool anybody. That was used for a what if post, and we clearly
it was a 3.5 minute Photoshop job on top of that.
Yeah, totally.
We clearly let everybody know this is just Derek's little rendering.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's like a glitterless Nexus.
Yeah, just gonna bring that up.
Man, that was the day.
I think it's more real than a glitterless Nexus.
New Google Maps is rolling out. If you haven't gotten it yet, you should shortly. Andrew did a pretty big walkthrough. I mean, it looks really nice.
It's really nice, yeah. And you can actually know what lane you need to be in before you exit on the road now.
That's a big deal.
If it prevents, you know, one more crash on the road when some guy tries to merge across four lanes because he needs to exit, then Google's done his job.
A big deal. Phil wasn't joking. That is a huge deal, and that's something I've been looking. I don't have the update yet. I'm crying the blues. I want it.
It's coming.
I know.
It's a big undertaking from Google to, you know, I mean, that's a lot of extra map data to have exits, you know, and lane changes and things like that.
Here's a good question from a Davin. Or Devin, probably Davin. Do you guys think that the HTC, this is, again, the rumored HTC Nexus tablet, will have S Pen-esque active stylus support a la the HTC Flyer? So HTC has done this before.
And, oh, you remember that? Flyer.
Yeah. And I mean, nobody really has one. I think Jerry might have one. I mean, and it was pretty good, if I remember. NVIDIA had some really good stylus support in one of its own tablets last year, right?
Yep.
So stranger things could happen. That would be really interesting.
It could happen. I wouldn't necessarily tie it back to the Flyer. The Flyer was a really weird early implementation of that kind of tech, so mm-hmm. I guess we'll have to see. It could happen, but I think this is Google's tablet more than it is HTC's, I think. HTC is working to Google specs, and as much as it is a partnership, this is going to be Google's flagship tablet for this year. So unless Google wants stylus support to be a native part of Android, then... I don't see HTC being able to bring that across. And I mean, HTC hasn't really been big on styluses since, you know, about 2011 anyway.
Since that one.
Or I mean, just nobody or has. Big on tablets in general.
Yeah.
It's also worth, stylus support is already native as far as you can use a stylus just like your finger. Alex hit it on the head. Do we want part of Android to be all these extra features like Samsung puts in the Note devices? That's the only reason that we would see something like that. So I don't know if we're going to or if we're not.
True. What else? Pebble firmware update this week, if you're a Pebble owner. And the apps themselves got updated. And, you know, it addressed stability, which is why I bring it up, because that's a big thing for me. It's worth mentioning the Yahoo News Digest app is really good. If you haven't tried it yet, absolutely do it. Who let the dogs out? Jerry. As I see his mute button.
Rex is really happy about the Yahoo News app.
By the way, the Android Central app got a pretty good update this week. I think actually all of our apps did. You can now finally post images into the forums straight from the news app. So that's a big deal. So go get that if you haven't already. Although that reminded me that Samsung does things differently. Because like if you're on anything other than a GS5, you don't see the overflow menu and people are like, where are those three dots you're using? And I just didn't even think about that. So, oh, yikes. I'm kind of maybe down on the...
Maybe the S5 is a new trend for Samsung, and they're just going to do away with that menu key.
That's kind of what I was...
It seems like it is. They're doing it on all their tablets as well, and surely it's about time.
Yeah.
And then next step, home button.
Samsung moves away the menu key while LG adds in a weird one.
Maybe they'll add a second software menu key now. You got one on both sides.
No, man. I mean, that's what I was thinking. Because I finally, hang on, I'm going to grab it. Oh, that's not even it. Where'd it go? All my Samsung phones look the same. There it is, right in front of me.
You don't know you did.
I'm going to get email now. No, I finally got one that's not white. But you know what I did? Jerry, turn your speakers down some. I did order a blue back off eBay because the blue is so nice.
And yours has even fewer dimples, though, because it has to have Verizon logo on the back.
But yeah, it's about as soft
as... It's nice, isn't it?
I like the feel of this phone, actually, quite a bit. Especially, I think I like the feel of it over... It, as much as I like the curves, it's just easier for me to hold because I have small hands than the M8 is. I mean, I that home button's killing me, though. That's where I was going with all that.
Yeah.
You know, since we're talking about it, I've got to send this one back to Sprint.
Sure.
I like it. I never in a million freaking years would have thought that I'd be saying I like the Galaxy S5. But I really dig the back on this black
go back
one.
To
I
our,
love the way it looks and the way it feels.
Go back to our video from Mobile World Congress, and I think you can hear the surprise in my voice where I'm just like, you know what? I like this. There are still a lot of things about it that drive me nuts, you know, especially the home button. But there's there are a lot of things in this phone that I like and that I think is really good. You know, I'm never going to use the heart rate monitor. I just
no. When the Google Play Edition one comes out, I'm going to ask you to buy me one until you finally break down, so I shut up.
I might have to. You know, I've tried using the fingerprint scanner for a while, and it was just so hit and miss for me. I mean, if you get it to work for you, awesome. But for me, it was so hit and miss, I just quit using it. You know what I'm using for everything now, since I bought it anyway? It was a Pebble Locker. Because not only will it, you know, it does trusted Bluetooth is what it does.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it'll use your Pebble for that. And then if you pay them a couple bucks, it'll do it for anything else as well. So I'm using that app for everything. In fact, that's my app pick this week. You can't steal it. So, I don't know. I like it. It's a good phone. It's not perfect. None of these is perfect. I have so many phones.
The one thing I really hope they can fix in software is low light performance. Because that's the big area of, I think that it sounds strange to say that it's the biggest weakness of the Galaxy S5's biggest strength, right? Because you use the Galaxy S5's camera in any kind of outdoor conditions, it takes amazing pictures. After a certain time or in a certain kind of lighting conditions, it just drops off a cliff. So I don't know. They have decent optics there. I really hope they can bring it up in low light with more software later on.
Anything else? Any other questions floating in there you guys want to do?
Taking a look through.
Phil is in more need of a new parking lot than a new car, says Francois.
No, it's a BMX track.
they're replacing the parking lot outside, and I have one of the few windows in this building actually, and it overlooks the parking lot. So I've been watching people on bulldozers all week. It's a lot of fun.
Charles said for me just to get a Moto X. That's my phone. That's the phone I spent money on last year.
Yep.
Best phone ever. Haven't seen one.
The developer edition, not at that, right?
I thought about that. What if we made that our best phone still? Throw that in there.
To me, it is. I'm sorry. I haven't seen anything from LG, and I haven't seen anything new from Motorola. So, you know, never say never, but while the M8 and the GS5 are both very nice phones, a lot of things I really like about them, I will still go back to the Moto X. It's just better for me.
So I saw a question here that I know we talked about, or we posted on Google Plus, I think. Ryan asks, is using 1 terabyte of mobile data in 1 month abusing the system?
Well, here's where Ryan, I know why Ryan's asking that.
Yeah.
Because that was somebody from our mod team, I think, wasn't it? Yes, I'm going to say yes.
Right, so somebody posted a screenshot in our forums of a mobile data counter showing something north of a terabyte of mobile data usage on their, I think, Verizon account in 1 month.
If you're paying for a terabyte of tethering and you tether for a terabyte, go for it, man.
Sure.
If you janked tethering on your phone without paying for it from Verizon, yes, it's abusing the system.
And actually, it's worth bringing up since Sprint apparently this week told Fierce Wireless that they're going to start throttling the people who are abusing it, which and actually kind of isn't anything new for Sprint. They've always capped.
Well, it's not new for many carriers because they always do some kind of quality of service. I mean, they don't want somebody using a bunch of data to make sure, you know, other people can't make a phone call or receive a text message just because they're connected to the same tower. So carriers have been doing quality of service work on their towers for a long time. But my big issue with this, and Verizon has talked about throttling the top 5% of users, but only at congested times and congested areas. I don't really understand how, so say I live out in the middle of nowhere and I'm the only person on a tower and I use 50 gigs the first 10 days of the month, and then I go into a city that's congested, why I'm the one that's punished for using data at that congested time just because I used data previously in, you know, potentially a different location. I just think that it's unfairly putting the hammer down on
people that used more data previously than the people that are heavily using data at the time of congestion.
But what's your alternative?
I'm not sure. I think that they just need to figure out a system. They need to bring everybody's service down slightly, because that's what they have to do. They have to make it even for everybody. I mean, everybody is roughly paying the same amount to connect to that tower on their one device that they're connecting to. Bring down the quality of service for everybody. I don't understand, you know, if you're one day into your bill cycle and you've used 50 megabytes on Verizon and the other person's 29 days into their cycle and they've used 5 gigabytes, why are both of those people getting different service levels just because there's a lot of people on the tower?
Okay. I could go for that. I just was curious what you thought would be better.
It's a tough situation, right? Because they need some kind of metric, you know, they need to justify to people why they're going to start throttling.
They need to take the billions of dollars in profit they show every quarter, buy more permits, put up more towers, or stop.
I harp on the carriers because they will do a bad job in, you know, dense cities, and I realize it's tough, but anecdotally, just really quick, I noticed, so my girlfriend will come home from work at 4:30, and she'll call me on the way home and say, sorry, I was going to let you know when I was leaving, but Verizon's data network just doesn't work in downtown once I leave the Wi-Fi network at work. And that's just unacceptable. Your network shouldn't just go down like that in the middle of a major city to where people can't even send an SMS. It's just unacceptable, and I think that it's worth talking about when they're talking about throttling the top 5% of people when you have other people that, you know, can't use the data network at all.
Well, something.
And then you have the standard line that it's Sprint, so can you really tell if they're throttling you anyway?
Right.
Something that we never talk about is carriers can't provide quality service to the customers they have, yet they spend so much more money attracting new customers. So That's an issue that I wouldn't be upset if Al Franken had a look at that. You know, I hate government oversight because, you know, I live in a bunker and whatever. But they can't handle the people they got now, and they spend billions of dollars to try to attract new people, and it works. And they attract new people, and the service just gets worse and worse.
Vote I think that's maybe wallet. More of an when you have a carrier that, you know, that is just unlimited data and. You know, maybe that feeds back into part of the reason why they feel they need to start throttling the top 1 or 5% or whatever it is.
Vote with your wallet.
It's either that or data caps.
Vote with your wallet. Vote with your wallet. By the way, I'm doing, and it's been a long time since I've tried Sprint here in Pensacola, and I got one of the new Harman Kardon M8s today to try out real quick, and it's on Sprint, obviously. I'm getting 15 down, 7 up here, and it's showing 1 bar of LTE. I was going to actually look and see what the numbers were, since we know that 1 bar doesn't mean anything. I think we need to be careful how much we badmouth Sprint these days, because they're getting better, and they're working on it. Yeah, signal strength isn't great.
Yeah, I mean, I'll badmouth anybody that does a bad job when I'm using their device.
Sure. I'm just saying.
When I looked at the Note 3, I noticed that Sprint much improved in my area. Still not as good as anybody else, but if I had to use the quality of service I get from Sprint now, I would be okay.
It wasn't that long ago that we sang the same tune about T-Mo. So.
Right. Comparatively, it wasn't that long ago where Sprint was so bad here you couldn't navigate. You couldn't use GPS. Now I'm talking 6 megabit per second downloads and 1 up. Which is enough for anyone. It may not be as much as you'd like, but it's enough.
Well, yeah, I definitely, I don't just bash on Sprint. I mean, I like to let anybody know when a carrier is performing badly. And, of course, it's all anecdotal, right? All I can say is about the places that I go and where I live. And, you know, we have 3 good examples here in the U.S. At least. And, you know, I'm sure Alex could go on about all the different carriers in the U.K. as well. But I mean, when I reviewed the GPAD 8.3 on Verizon, I put a big segment in there about, hey, you know, there's no 3G on this device. So if the LTE network isn't there for you, then you just can't use it. And that's, you know, something you got to remember with these things. It's all about how you use it and where you use it.
Yep. All right, with that, I think we're done.
Carry your rant over.
We went long today. That felt good. Felt good to me anyway. Fine. Whatever. If you want to, you can email us. We didn't get to emails this week. We'll do it next week. podcast@androidcentral.com. You can get us all on Google Plus and Twitter and all that stuff. Just search our names. You can keep up with the state of my parking lot here at the office. So, if you know you want to do that for some reason. As we are every week, we are brought to you by shopandroid.com. Call 888-468-6158 or just go to shopandroid.com. What's today? The 9th. So I think they've got a big 20% sale going on for Mother's Day through the 12th, if I remember right. So you can go save some this weekend if you want. Shopandroid.com. Go download our app. If you haven't already, go download the all-new Connectedly app. For those of you who are using the Smartwatch Fans app, it's dead. Done. Although I guess it still works, but uninstall it. Go get the Connectedly app. In fact, let me look and see how it's doing today.
It's free 99.
Free 99, he said.
Free 99.
Free 99. So yeah, absolutely do that. Let's see. Yeah, people are uninstalling it slowly but surely. Do that. Jerry, Alex, Andrew, thank you guys. Everybody listening at home, thank you. What do we have coming up next week? Anything? Motorola event?
Yeah, Motorola, we got the London thing. We're down there with James Richardson. We'll get a look at whatever they're doing, probably the Moto E.
I'm entering a chili cook-off down at the fire hall.
Woohoo!
Win or lose, I get to sit in a parking lot, drink beer, and eat.
How's that different than any other day?
Hey. Jealous.
Yeah. You know it.
Yeah. Phil's working on the parking lot part first at work. Then he'll get the chili cook-off.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody watching. It means a lot to us. Thank you, three hooligans down there. See y'all next week.
Bye. Later.
See you later.
Oh, that's a siren. They're coming to get Andrew.
No, that wasn't me.
Oh, that wasn't you? No.
Well, that might have been me.
I live too high off the ground to hear sirens now.
Oh, wow.
I imagine Andrew's just like at the top of the Space Needle or something.
No, not in the clouds.
I see it in the background, that's why.
I live somewhere where there are no services that have sirens on their vehicle.